Okay. Practice makes perfect. Want to try the banjo? It's okay. We'll just let you sing.
Welcome back, cool cats and cat allies alike, to 6 Degrees of Cats, the world's best and only cat-themed culture, history, and science podcast. Hello, hello. This is your captain speaking. Wow, I cannot believe we're an episode away from the end of the season. And the time has come. A time I've been semi-dreading, to be honest. It's true. We'll be talking about banjos, violins, and shamisens. Now, the connection to cats, that's what I'm a little bit worried about. I've been wanting to take care of y'all, my listeners. But some 20-odd years ago, someone, I can't remember who, told me that early stringed instruments used catgut.
Sorry, guys.
And that's haunted me ever since. How? Why? I just refuse to believe that these adorable, living, purring, hot water bottles for the soul were ever seen as raw materials. I mean, who does that? It just can't be true. Look, I get the hypocrisy. I know there are so many things that I consume that use animal byproducts. It's complicated. And, you know, as I say in my sign-off, everything is connected. So, in this episode of 6 Degrees of Cats, I'm finally ready to compassionately and humanely investigate that rumor that catgut was used for stringed instruments. We'll be hearing from experts on these three stringed instruments. So, if discussion of our beloved's posthumous remains is too much, I totally get it. Do feel free to opt out. Just know that I am bringing to this discussion, as always, much respect, both for the cultures that we're going to be talking about, and of course, the kitties involved. Okay, here we go. So yeah, catgut.
I'm sorry. This is going to come up a lot. I think you need to leave the room.
Once someone, definitely my dad, put that image in my mind, I tried really hard just to shelve it away. But about 10 years later, as a college student, my curiosity got the best of me when I picked up a part-time sales job at my local music store. The store was known for guitars, but it also sold basses and didgeridoos. There was also a violin, you know, and I actually think there were several ashikos and djembes. And for some reason, a bunch of dulcimers, which we never sold. And banjos.
We're closed.
So, I think it was one slow weekend morning, I broached the topic, catgut, with a few colleagues who were hanging out before the lessons they taught. Starting with the classical guitarist, Ellen.
Catgut? You mean for strings? I don't know. Classical strings are nylon. You have something in your teeth, Amanda.
Yo, that's fucked up. Where'd you hear that?
That was Roy, who moonlit as a touring guitarist for a very outre act that rapped about decapitation in horror costumes on stage.
You ever heard of that, Chip?
Huh. I think I've heard of that with Asian instruments, but I don't know.
Hello,
hey,
bud.
Brother.
Hey, guys. Oh, yeah. And banjos. Hey, bud. Amanda's asking about catgut.
Huh. Catgut.
Do banjos use it?
The banjo does have skin and strings. I've never played a banjo with catgut, but yeah, maybe.
Thanks, bud and gang. This slightly fabricated but spiritually truthful recollection takes us to our first instrument of inquiry. With all great respect to Bud and all the amazing players who came in over those couple of years, outside of a few folk and country western tunes that I appreciated from a distance, it didn't really factor into the music I listened to at the time. Further, having seen Bud demo songs in between lessons, man, the technical skills to make that thing sing take a shocking level of dexterity and coordination. You can't fake a claw hammer. And it had a pretty strong association with rural folks in the South, specifically in the Appalachian regions, who, I imagined, spent a lot of time outdoors and issued footwear, education, contraceptives, dentists, bank accounts, grammar, or etiquette, who were, quote-unquote, backwards. So this image of catgut and the banjo, you know, it kind of played into my stereotypes about the instrument and the people who play it, thanks to the mainstream American media. I mean, take the Beverly Hillbillies, a popular American sitcom from the postmodern 20th century that lampooned a newly wealthy Appalachian family transplanted into Beverly Hills, you know, the old fish out of water thing. The theme song, The Ballad of Jed Clampett, featured a banjo. I'd say, though, that the most prominent stereotype came from the hit 1972 motion picture based on a book called Deliverance. Oh, you know that riff. Deliverance is a taut thriller starring Burt Reynolds' chest hair in which three men from out of town are stalked and, in one really awful case, violently and intimately assaulted in a very isolated rural setting by its denizens. You know, the old fish out of water thing. Near the southern Appalachian mountain range in Georgia. It's a pleasant family film.
Just kidding.
But it is a major work in the canon of a genre of gory slasher films that unfortunately are called hillbilly horror. So yeah, I'm kind of pleased to dispel one of the stereotypes right off the bat. As far as the record shows, banjos were not and are not traditionally constructed of catgut skin or fur.
I have not really thought about the connection between cats and banjos. Goat skin has typically been used, and there's calf skin as well.
That was a musician leading the education and reclamation of the banjo by its original players.
I'm Hannah Mae Ree. My pronouns are they, them. I am a musician, a creative facilitator with Hannah Mae Ree Productions and all the work I do with my music. I also am a founder of the Black Banjo Reclamation Project.
Hannah's expertise on the banjo is specific to both its history and its construction.
I'm curious to know how smaller animals for a banjo skin affects the quality of sound. Essentially, the skin is what creates the tension for the instrument to kind of stay in place altogether because the bridge is attached to the skin. It's actually being held on by the tension of the strings against the skin.
And as for the strings,
you would actually cut out the small intestine of the goat. You clean them out. They would be made into strips, and then they would be stretched and spun at the same time. I think a lot of people have seen a banjo, but in case you haven't, they do come in all shapes and sizes. You're typically going to have a neck that's about as long as your arm, but probably shorter than your entire arm span. A neck would be something that could fit inside of your hand. And then it's coming together with like a circular shape, which is usually like a rim of something.
And obviously, you might be wondering like why and how was catgut ever associated with banjos in the first place? Let's keep looking into the banjo's history, starting with how it got that round shape.
I feel like the banjo harkens back to the earliest of stringed instruments. Traditionally, that was like a gourd, and, you know, these gourds were not a perfect circle. In today's world, especially with like manufacturing, it's just a little easier to create something that's like more of a perfect circle. So a lot of those have metal rims, wooden rims, but our modern banjo has really retained several aspects of the traditional instruments. And one of those is specifically like having skin of an animal on the instrument.
Up until the late 20th century, ethnomusicologists and historians had attributed the banjo's parentage to instruments played by griot musicians, who were key community historians, storytellers, and musicians that held court during the Great Mandé Empire of the 13th century in Mali. However, thanks to Daniel Jatta and his colleagues' scholarship and advocacy, it seems that the banjo may have actually descended from a different instrument and tradition.
The Akonte from Gambia, we pay homage to the lineage of Daniel Jatta, who's in the Gambia area of West Africa.
The legacy of the banjo, distinct from other stringed instruments hailing from West Africa and neighboring regions, is coming into clearer focus. But how did the banjo make its way from West Africa to North America?
How did that get from Africa to here, you know? How did this transform? There's a lot of research to support that the banjo is here and really in the hands of a lot of white people because of slavery and oppression and colonization.
According to expert and historian Tony Thomas, banjos first emerged from the work of enslaved folks who were brought to the Caribbean. There's evidence that this instrument was brought to North America in the 17th century, which would follow the path of the enslaved Africans brought up from those islands, who then were trafficked from there to North America. And from there, the banjo evolved.
It's a diasporic instrument. It be derived from an African instrument that then as people were displaced, people were relocating to different places. There's like a traveling legacy of the banjo. There's early accounts of the banjo all over Turtle Island from New York down into the Carolinas. Some early banjo builders were located in Harlem, McGinnis and Shaw. I'm also shouting out to them as well and their legacy. And I'm really also just shouting out all of the unnamed and unknown banjo players.
The banjo is so obviously by and for the Black diaspora. But, well, right now, almost all the major banjo players and fans seem to be white. And then there's that stereotype we talked about earlier.
There's a lot of propaganda in America that has used the banjo to sort of promote that this is something that is created by white people, erasing the history of where this comes from.
How did that happen? Well, first, Jim Crow. Now synonymous with the laws that allowed for segregation, this name was originally for the grotesque and indescribably racist persona assumed by a white man in the 19th century who entertained white audiences by darkening his skin into blackface.
Don't do that.
And dancing, performing comedy, singing, and playing the banjo. I could not find sources to attest to when and how poor white Appalachian residents first came to be connected to the banjo. My educated guess is that the banjo's association with black culture at the time was used to mock poor white people, many of whom were located in rural and southern regions near and by black people. But this is all an educated guess, as I said. And as for why and how cat skin became associated with this demeaning stereotype, I have a guess, and it might be connected to the fact that scraps and non-traditional materials, though not cats, were used to make the first banjos.
The Black Banjo Reformation Project were pretty big about experimenting because we know that that's what our ancestors had to do. If they were in the situation, they weren't looking up in a book, they weren't researching, oh, has anybody done this before? They either knew about it or they didn't. What they knew, they used that to like get more information. And there's so much to be grateful for in terms of knowing what people had to go through And even after being forcibly made to work, the fact that they had endured so much trauma of being separated in the first place, this was still something that was super paramount and super important. This banjo was giving life in a way.
I don't know about you, but I'm definitely seeing the banjo in a whole new light. What an instrument. It's transcended race and class to have a very prominent place in American culture. Now, hopefully, with more education and reclamation by the Black community that Hannah and her colleagues are doing, the banjo will gain broader recognition and appreciation alongside its other stringed brethren. All of which, do not use literal cat gut. Actually, do some of them? I guess we still haven't quite closed the book on cat gut. So, let's continue this inquiry after the break. Before the break, we looked into the rumor that catgut was used for banjos. And thanks to Black Banjo Reclamation Project's Hannah Marie, I feel pretty confident that we can cut the banjo-cat connection loose, at least for now. So, here we are. Back to square one. The truth behind catgut. Ugh, what an ineloquent word. I mean, viscerally just ugh. And as it turns out, unnecessarily so.
We used to joke around in undergrad. We would tell younger players that they're gut strings or cat gut strings because they use cat intestines, but they really don't. From what I know, kit is a Welsh term for fiddle. So I think that's where the name came from, but it has nothing to do with cats.
Ah, Welsh. As in Wales, where vowels are scarce, but they, like we 6 Degrees of Cats people, love super furry animals. The band. There's a band called Super Furry Animals that's Welsh. Anyway, this is what brings us to Europe, the continent of origin, but not nationality, of our next expert.
My name is Joanne Dumitrescu. I'm Canadian. I live in New York now. I was born in Romania. I'm a professional musician. My training focus was violin performance as well as piano as a secondary instrument, and I studied film as well.
Joanne plays an instrument that is from a very cat-loving place. I mean, remember the Romans? Yep, we're talking about Italy.
Historically, they're saying that what we now call the modern-day violin started in 16th century northern Italy. And that's in the Lombardy region, that to this day, it's really maintained that violin-making tradition. The most notable city is Cremona, and that's where the Amati family, they made violins and violas. And between the 16th and the 18th centuries, there were several generations in the Amati family who were violin makers. Further on, they taught Guarneri and Stradivari. So that's basically where all of these amazing instruments come from.
Let's talk about those strings.
So basically, cat gut or gut core strings, which is what we call them today, made the way they were made in the Baroque period. They're prepared by using the natural fiber found in like the walls of animal intestines. It's usually sheep or goat, but also other cattle, hogs, horses, donkeys, and that's basically what was used in gut core strings. They are very fragile. They don't last very long. They do break very easily, and they also don't stay in tune very long, so they require a lot of tuning. And they do have a beautiful sound. It's much warmer than synthetic and steel core, but they're extremely difficult to play on.
And what are those strings made of now?
When you hear of Baroque specialists in particular, they play Baroque instruments and they do use gut core strings. For professional modern players, and that includes jazz players, folk musicians, they're usually steel core, and then they have various metals wrapped around it. the synthetic core started being used around the 1970s or so, and they have a very quick response. They're also not very high maintenance, so they're mostly used by beginner players.
Thanks for clearing that up, Joanne. It sounds like Katz just randomly got tied up to this gut string situation thanks to a simple mistranslation from Welsh or German or whatever to English. Is it now safe to say that there are no instruments that use cat materials? Are we done here? No. Sorry, y'all. We have one more stop on this morbid quest. So let's head on over to a place we've been before.
Nihon.
Japan. Yours truly lived in Japan a lifetime ago. And for a while, I worked in a school that hosted an after-school shamisen class a few rooms down the hall from where I was set up. And sometimes I could even hear them practice. Harp-like scales resonating from this unique, very Japanese instrument, which, for a foreigner like me, really felt special, you know? Until the day Ando-sensei rocked up to chat about the next day's lessons. After exchanging the usual pleasantries, the conversation naturally steered toward cats.
I love cats.
Oh,
cats.
And I think I mentioned something about finding them very magical.
Cats.
Ando-sensei processed this and then paused to also admire the shamisen music wafting in through the paper-thin walls.
Oh, they are preparing for school festival. You know, I hear the instrument is made of cat, maybe for magical properties. But, I don't know, maybe you should ask Tanaka-sensei, shamisen club instructor.
Also, Amanda-sensei, you have something in your teeth.
Unfortunately, by the time I got my teeth cleaned up, Tanaka-sensei and her students had left school, and I never worked up the nerve to ask again. Thankfully, here we are, friends, 20 years later. And we're gonna find out if cats were, instrumental in the making of the shamisen. So, I'd like to thank our next expert, a postdoctoral fellow at the Center for Japanese Studies at the University of Michigan.
My name is Keisuke Yamada. I'm originally from Japan. I came to the U.S. for my ethnomusicology study in Japanese music, particularly musical instruments. I studied the shamisen, the instrument itself, rather than Japanese traditional music.
I obviously got the right guy for the job here. For those who haven't seen or heard one before, let's briefly describe the shamisen. I'll include a link in the show notes to a playlist with some video examples that you can check out after.
The shamisen, which is a three-stringed lute, has many different types. They use the shamisen to play nagauta, which is music performed for kabuki theater. Nowadays, they play some improvisation and popular music with Tsugaru shamisen from Tsugaru region, Aomori, northeast part of Japan.
The shamisen sounds like, well, it has a long fretless neck and three peg tuners to tighten or loosen the strings. Its body is composed of a rounded square-shaped wooden frame, which is covered by an animal skin. Players position the instrument similarly to a banjo, but instead of playing with a pick or your fingers, players will pluck the strings with a large kind of paint scraper-looking thing called a bachi. And also similarly to the banjo, the shamisen too has traveled.
The shamisen was originally brought from China by the end of 14th century to Ryukyu Island.
Okinawa, colonized by Japan in the early 19th century.
Then from Ryukyu Island to the mainland by mid-16th century.
Which is where we get the cat connection. So are cats truly used as materials for the shamisen? Well, take it away, Dr. Yamada.
even though illustrations from this period shows someone is playing the shamisen, it's very difficult to find historical information like what scheme was used exactly. The Ryukyu instrument called sansin, the body is covered with snake skin. When this instrument was brought to the mainland of Japan, they changed to another skin because they couldn't find snake skin to cover the large body.
But then at some point,
today's Japanese music scholars are saying that cat was used.
And there it is, folks. We found the smoking gun. Cats have shown up in Japanese culture for a long time. They began to appear in documents and legends around the 12th century. It's surmised that cats were first brought to Japan as gifts or were employed to keep rodents away from Buddhist scripts. So this may explain a bit why cat skin was used specifically in Japan and how an industry of the skin trade was apparently a thing.
I looked at newspapers from late 19th century. They were cat traders to sell them to shamisen skin makers.
There's a rumor I found about a cat ghost curse on shamisen makers. I'm still researching its origins. And in fact, there's actually a much more real curse on those shamisen skin traders that we need to talk about. Dr. Yamada's work focuses on this.
This is new information, I think, at least for the ethnomusicology literature. In pre-modern period Japan, around 1600, there was a caste system. Those who are social outcasts, excluded from the mainstream society, was then called the gurakumi. People at that time believed that those who touched dead body are considered contaminated, spiritual contamination. Killing animals means that people are getting contaminated. So people let those social outcasts make these materials. One note is that the body of the shamisen, neck and the head of the shamisen are separate. Shamisen makers are not considered black men, while the shamisen skin makers are considered black men. In the mid-19th century, I think 1870, the caste system was abolished. However, this kind of discrimination continued.
Wow. From what I understand about caste systems, there's a lot of really serious and severe discrimination that can go on for generations. Here we thought we were talking about cats, but this is a human welfare issue. I had no idea before talking to Dr. Yamada that it was so entangled with the shamisen. I'll let him continue.
This is a human rights issue and also animal rights issue today. I wrote an article about these historical changes, how moral and ethical perspectives on life has changed throughout time. Then how this transformation affected the making of the shamisen. Shamisen skin makers are located in Kansai regions, the shamisen. Human rights activists in the city of Osaka,
a major city in the Kansai region,
they investigated the labor of black men. Then they wrote about a contemporary shamisen skin maker. Japan established animal protection law in 1973. After that, I think only a few shamisen skin makers in Japan. So today they are mostly outsourcing from China. Nowadays, from 80 to 90% of shamisen skins are dog skin, and the remaining 10 to 20 are the cat skin.
So it's not even just cats, but dogs too. That said, the shamisen you might come across online or in any type of folk instrument catalog, at least outside of China and Japan, that's not going to be made of animal skin.
I think many shamisen players nowadays, not only in Japan, but also across the world, mostly use synthetic skin.
So that's a win for cats and dogs and snakes, it might seem. But what about the burakamin? While I'm grateful to the animal rights movement for making sure that animals' welfare isn't lost in the mix, I'm kind of concerned that this activism might have exploited or furthered the marginalization of the burakamin.
The reason why the Japanese government established Naro was pressure from animal rights activists, mostly in 1960s to 1970s. Many of them consisted of cat lovers. They were fighting particularly against the traders, the cat traders.
The burakamin. Now, don't get me wrong. Come on. It's me, Captain Kitty here. I am definitely not calling for the revival of this cat trade. But it's kind of not great that the advocacy for the cats and dogs seemed to preclude consideration for the burakamin, those folks being vilified and stigmatized for, well, that trade. Do I love the idea of cats being used for anything but worship? No. But do I think that cultures who have used cats' bodies for stuff are intrinsically terrible or backwards? I used to say yes, but, well, now it's a bit more complicated. I'm going to just leave you with Hannah's really good points.
I think it's a way to honor them. Each animal is so special and they carry their life with them. And so whatever animal is used for that is not only like giving their life, but giving us a new opportunity to actually create something in this world that's connected to Earth. So I'm super grateful for the banjo and being able to just bring in the concept of the animals, because they are literally responsible for the banjo and for all these instruments being able to exist.
That I can agree with. Well, my dear listeners, I guess we can look at it this way. Cats and dogs now join snakes, horses, goats, cows, donkeys, and pigs, among other animals, as those deemed worthy of music. We're done for now, at least, talking about catgut. In the next episode, which is our season finale, we're going to redirect our attention to the living little gods in our homes that we have adopted into our families. And speaking of family, what that actually means. For now, I want to thank my wonderful experts,
Hannah Marie,
Joanne Dumitrescu,
and
Keisuke Yamada.
While the opinions are my own, the research and work is theirs. If you'd like to learn more about them, please check out our show notes, which also include the references and research that went into this episode. I don't know if you could love this episode, but if you at least learn from it, please do spread the word to anybody who would appreciate the culture, history, and sometimes the scientific aspects of what we explore. I appreciate you all so much for sticking around. Thank you for sharing, caring, and hanging out. Stay beautiful, and remember, everything is connected.
6 Degrees of Cats is produced, written, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Captain Kitty, aka Amanda B. Please subscribe to our mailing list by going to linktr.ee/6degreesofcats or look us up on all those social media platforms. You'll be first in line for the extra audio and more treats if you connect with us there. All episodes are dedicated to the misunderstood, the marginalized, the resilient, and the weird. And of course, all the cats we've loved and lost.
I'm sorry, I know this was a pretty morbid topic for you two. You get extra treats for enduring this. And you know I'd never let anyone lay a hand on your hide. Although, I think we should make use of your cat wool. Maybe those Norse folks were onto something.